Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to U-Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Providing unbiased opinions on all things U-Talk football and basketball.
All right, welcome to this episode of Ute Talk. It's kind of an off week. Apparently, Patrick and Andy wanted to take Halloween off to go trick-or-treating. I mean, they're grown men, but apparently they got in costumes and went door-to-door. So we're filling in for them. We're going to hit some Ute news, review the Washington game, and then talk about some more of the season trends that either concern us or have been a surprise. So without further ado, let me introduce our newest co-host to the Ute Talk. We're bringing in Brian Brown. Brian, why don't you give our listeners a quick rundown of who you are and what you plan to bring to the show?
That'd probably be a good idea. So currently I work over at Cypress High School, work as an academic tracker, and I also coach the offensive line there. I played college football at Snow College for 2 years, and then after that I went down to Dixie State for a little stint. Decided that it wasn't worth playing ball if I wasn't getting paid anymore, so that was kind of the end of that. You can find me on Twitter at BrownBearSLC. I tend to share my opinion no matter what. People probably don't like it a lot because I try to tell them how wrong they are all the time, but just kind of wanted to offer my perspective on the X and O's aspect of it. I've played offensive line my entire life, so I really know the trenches pretty well. Coaching it now, it's kind of my obsession. And so, you know, right now I've got a lot more time on my hands than I want. Wish we were in the playoff chase, but it is what it is. And so I figured I'd jump on here and answer some questions, maybe provide a little insight for everybody.
All right, great. So once again, we're finally getting some people who know X's and O's. So now our fans and listeners won't just have to listen to me and Joseph potentially geek out on some stats. But so
let's making up the X's and O's, so it's good.
To yeah.
So I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, let's talk about some Ute news. There was some big news last week on the recruiting front, and Joseph had that pretty well covered. Joseph, what was the big news on the recruiting front last week?
Jaylon Johnson. He's a top 100 recruit nationally for Scout and Rivals and a top 300 for ESPN, 6'1", between 175, 185-pound cornerback or free safety and out of California. He was being recruited hard by big-time schools. USC, Oklahoma, Georgia were all coming after him hard, and big credit to Sharif Shah for landing this player. He's a next-level kind of prospect without a weakness. He's big. He tackles hard. Really good at press coverage, really good at breaking up passes, great instincts off the ball. There's nothing not to like. The Ute class is going to probably be a little small because we've got returning missionaries and some push forwards this year. So with him and Tyquez Hampton over the last couple of weeks, we've gotten a couple of four-star prospects that are really going to beef up a class that's going to need quality over quantity this year.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the youth have really built up a good wave as far as, you know, last year. I've heard some say last year's recruiting class was one of the best ever, and it seems like, I mean, this is a darn good first domino to fall to have a strong recruiting class this year. So, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. Now, as far as other youth news, I don't know if you guys saw, but the youth actually moved up a spot in the rankings, and then Washington got snubbed on the playoff side of things, being ranked fifth in the first playoff rankings. Don't know if there's any real takeaways besides there's some huge SEC East Coast bias. I'm from the East Coast, and it's ridiculous to watch how much bias there is on the East. Do you guys want to add to anything or any other news you want to bring in?
There's definitely bias there. I'm not worried about it in the long run. I feel like the mid-season polls are really misleading from the playoff committee. What it really boils down to is four conference champions with the four best records go to the playoff. If Utah were to win the Pac-12 at 11-2, and the winner of, you know, say Oklahoma wins the Big 12, then maybe you start talking about a one-loss non-conference champion going in. But what's always happened historically is that that last game, when they actually get that conference title, the committee bumps everybody up a couple of spots. And so, I mean, Washington's on pace for the playoffs. If anything, I think it's going to serve as useful motivation for them, a little chip on their shoulder so that they can play their best against Cal this week and USC next week, which is going to be a challenging game even at home.
Yeah, Washington really has probably the bulk of their schedule coming up as far as to really – they have an opportunity to impress this coming couple weeks. Colorado, Washington State, I mean, they've got some tough games coming.
I think the other aspect, too, is you look at – as the season kind of ends here, especially from a coaching perspective, that's the hardest time where it is to get, you know, keep kids engaged, keep kids on board. They're starting to get tired. Bodies are worn down. You're starting to face a lot of injuries. You know, you can kind of see it a little bit in the game with Washington. You know, Joe Williams comes back, does a great job. You know, but he's starting to get a little fatigued now with all the carries and everything like that. And that's kind of where the landscape is really going to change, because you're going to see a lot of teams start taking hits. I mean, you saw with Washington, they lost their defensive end there. I'm not sure it had a huge impact on the game. They still played pretty well defensively, but that kind of stuff has a huge, huge, you know, relevancy as things wind down here.
All right. Well, without any other real news, in my opinion, let's talk about the Washington game. And the first thing that I really noticed throughout the Washington game is it seemed like the Utes really had – a tough time setting the edge on the defensive side of things. And since Brian's coming on board to give us some X's and O's, Brian, I was really hoping you could drop some analysis on, you know, what it is with what was so hard about setting the edge against Washington and what it takes to really do that on a defensive side.
Well, there's a couple things that go into that. I mean, the first part about it is that Washington does a lot of flops and motions and things like that, and that aspect of it. It's difficult because typically when you're on a defense, you're sitting your strength side or the side that you want to defend, you know, a certain part of their offense to whatever side either the tight end is going for or wherever you're setting it. You know, if you're sending it to the field side, if you're on a hash, you're sending it to the boundary, whatever your scheme is asking for. And so when they do that flop motion where they'll bring a tight end from one side to the other, you know, flop guys all the way across, and you're scrambling to get set back up or shift your guys down, it changes your alignment. And so that can be problematic at times, because you could have a guy who's going from a 3 to a 1, for example. Typically with the interior guys, it's not as big a deal. With the ends and linebackers, you can kind of see sometimes a nickel or a linebacker would have to step up on the line of scrimmage, and that can be a scramble. And so that plays a role. The other aspect of it, too, is that Washington does a lot of counter stuff. You know, when it's a counter, it's where you're pulling guards or tackles from the backside and bringing them to play side, trying to get the proper angles to either kick an end out or stretch the play. And I think that's probably where most people saw the loss of containment. Hans Olsen did a pretty good job of diagramming where there were times where the linebackers would over-scrape. And when we say over-scrape, we mean that you're trying to get to the outside to fill a gap. And as they start to stretch those plays out on the field, you can see where linebackers would over-pursue or go to the wrong gap because there's so much space to fill. When people talk about it being a game of inches, that's really where it comes into play. Because if you're a foot out of place or a foot past your gap, you know, all of a sudden what could have been a no gain or a 1 yard gain turns into 16, 20 yards. And so that aspect of it is, it's not confusing for the defense, but you're always on the fly and you're trying to get set. And so you can kind of see it like with baseball players, when they step into the box, they do their whole routine. You'll watch a defensive lineman will kind of do the same thing as well and get settled in. And when you're trying to move and flop and check guys with your coverage and everything like that, because they're going to a different formation, it can just cause that little bit of unsettled mentality as you go through the snap, and that can just lead to them getting just that extra inch to get outside of you if you're the defensive end, or, you know, if you're a defensive end and they flop a tight end over and now the tight end's crashing down on you, that can set the edge really hard. You know, all that stuff comes into play. And so that's part of the reason why Washington was able to get the outside. Another aspect of it, too, is there are different ways to play counter blocks. And I think at times, you know, Hunter Dimmick does a really good job of it. There were times where he would crash into the lead puller. So either a guard or a tackle or sometimes a center will be the lead puller. And their job is either to kick a guy out, or if they're setting an edge, for example, with a tight end on a defensive end, then the guard will kind of lead upfield. And that'll create more havoc because you get a guy who's 6'4", 6'5", you know, 300 pounds, and can run going up against the linebacker who's 6'1", 6'2", and 230. You know, it's a pretty tough play for the linebacker to get through that guy.
You're saying there's a size advantage on all offensive linemen versus linebacker.
Just a little bit. You know, here I am pointing out the obvious, you know. But I mean, and that's the whole goal of those counters and those counter trays, is that you want to get the motion confusing those guys so they hesitate for just a little bit, and that'll allow those big guys who are a little bit slower to get to the outside, and then they can get those one-on-one matches with those little guys, and it's tough, you know. You know, as an offensive lineman, that was the best part of my day, was when I could get out on a little linebacker or a corner or a safety and kind of knock those guys, you know, 15, 20 yards downfield. And, you know, it takes a lot of effort as a linebacker to continually fight through those blocks. And I think there were times where the linebackers were trying to avoid blocks or go around a guy. And, you know, if a running back has good vision, then he can cut up inside of the block, and it's, you know, it's game over for the defender at that point. And what, you know, again, a 2-yard game becomes 5, a 5-yard game becomes 15 when that kind of stuff happens.
All right. Well, I mean, it's interesting. I know later we were planning on talking about the defense, and we will get to the defense overall as the season. But it seemed like to me in this game that, you know, outside of the issues with setting the edge, there are a few big plays. I mean, this defense really does. It gives up chunk plays on occasion. But as far as the performance, it seemed to me that they, you know, the first quarter and the third quarter, you know, beginning of the game, halftime adjustments, there was, you know, Washington maybe won that halftime adjustment battle. But come, you know, second and fourth quarters, the Utah defense really kind of got things locked down and allowed Utah a chance to win the game.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like there were a couple of scoring drives that they had a rough time with. But when Washington wasn't clicking, the Utah defense looked really, really good. It was about three-quarters of the way through the second quarter where Washington had two scoring drives where they put up 8.9 yards per play, but in all their other drives, it was 3.6. So Utah played really well, except when they didn't. It was an interesting kind of boom or bust feel to the
game. I think one of the keys to that is that, yeah, I agree 100%. I think one of the keys to it is that you notice when they got them in the second and third and long, that Washington had a harder time converting a lot of those drives. But again, it goes back to if you set the edge on first down and don't allow any kind of yardage, then you can get him into those second and third and longs. And to me, it didn't look like Jake Browning was super comfortable back in the pocket for a lot of the day. You know, it didn't look like they wanted to give him the opportunity to throw the ball a ton. And I wonder if that's maybe because Utah does such a great job of disguising their coverage. I mean, they really do a fantastic job of doing that. When we talk about disguising coverage, every quarterback has a pre-snap read. You know, you're going to look at where a guy is at, how he's facing, if he's, you know, facing the defender straight up, if he's turned inward, if he's turned outward, and that's going to give you kind of, you know, a clue as to whether they're in cover three or if they're in quarters or six or two or man or whatever the coverage is. And, you know, if people have questions about that, I'd be more than happy to go in depth. When they're not trying to listen, you know, to a cool podcast, but I think Utah does a great job of disguising that, and perhaps that's one thing that Washington wanted to do, is to stay away from, you know, him having to read coverages all day long.
Yeah, Brian, one thing I wanted to ask you about that I've noticed or feel like I've noticed and see sometimes in the numbers is you see this. Sort of typical pattern where teams that get the most sacks actually don't have the best pass defenses. And I feel like a lot of that comes from blitzing. When you're a team like the Utes, who's able to get pressure with four, that's a different kind of pressure than when you're getting pressure by bringing a linebacker, a quarterback, or something like that over and over again, because you've got enough enough defenders back there. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
No, absolutely, absolutely. And I think the other part about it, too, is when you can get pressure with four, that means that you're dropping six or seven in the coverage. You know, you could possibly do a delay blitz or QB spy if you've got someone who's pretty mobile. I mean, it's hard to find holes when there are six guys dropped in coverage. You know, there are four guys blanketed across, two underneath. You know, that fills up a lot of space. And any route that's going to open up a hole is going to take some time. And if you can get to a quarterback in 3 seconds or less with your front four, you don't have time to open up those routes. And so I think when people talk about, like, dink and dunk and short game, a lot of that stuff comes into play. You know, we saw UCLA have a lot of success with that kind of stuff, because they have the athletes who can create separation from, you know, from the jump. That causes you to play your defense a little bit more, or I should say a little bit less pressure style, so you're not going to be up and pressing on the corners, you're not going to be up tight in your coverage, you're going to be backed off a little bit because you don't want to get beat over the top so badly. And so because of that, it kind of opens you up to the little stuff underneath, you know, slants, curls, 5 yard outs, just little stuff like that. And that takes away from the pass rush. And so you can see the difference in having the ability to do that with UCLA and in Washington, where they knew they had to get yardage on first and second down through the run game in order to keep them out of those third and long situations, because they didn't feel like they had the ability, you know, to really to beat the Utes on third and long through the pass game. And I think, you know, it's a huge advantage if you can get pressure with four. Because if you can do that, then that takes away from having to blitz guys and things like that. And then if you can get pressure with four and you bring five, and especially on third and long situations, you know, if you bring pressure with five, then you can get a sack and get them off the field almost immediately. And it just disrupts the play before you have a chance. And one thing I saw from Browning is he's a pretty impressive playmaker, but he didn't seem to move around exceptionally well. When pressure was kind of coming, you know, he got out of the pocket a few times and made a few plays happen. But guys who are really, really good at that, you know, Lamar Jackson, for example, when he feels the pressure, he's gone and he makes a play, you know. And Utah did a really good job, I think, in my opinion, of trying to keep him in the pocket and keep the pressure condensed.
All right, well, there is, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, it really tells you how important the defensive line is and how important it is that the Utes are able to disguise their coverages. I mean, Chase Hansen got an interception. Lua Fakasanga almost had an interception and went right through his hand. But, you know, the other thing that I really wanted to touch on outside of hashtag Pac-12 refs for this game would be the play calling. I feel like the Utes get in their way a little bit in play calling, and maybe you're going to tell me I'm wrong, Brian, but there's specifically two things that happened in this game that make me just scratch my head. The first one was the goal line situation, where in essence the drive would have been a field goal if it hadn't been for Washington getting an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty by trying to talk too much trash to Troy Williams. But it seemed like on that play, like, the whole idea, and tell me if I'm wrong, but the idea of a constraint play is that we've been using our typical package. You know, we're running Joe Williams, couple pass plays, but we're running Joe Williams. And then we got into the goal line. It was almost like we decided, hey, this is a good time to do constraint plays because we're going to mix it up. We're going to put in a huge player to block for Troy Williams, and we're going to do this, and we're not even going to have Joe Williams on the field. The problem is for a play like that to work, in my opinion, is the defense has to be overplaying something. So Joe Williams needs to be on the field, so they're overplaying against Joe Williams for something else to work. Or in this case, where Joe Williams hadn't been stuffed yet in the game, the penalty you call, they put Joe Williams in, he runs it to the 2-yard line, and then the next play he runs it into the end zone. I just feel like the offensive play calling too creative, but they got in their way there. And then the other play being the final play where they threw a Hail Mary into the end zone And I know Troy overthrew it. You know, that's a small execution issue. But, you know, why not try to get a first down? I mean, heck, run what has been Utah's specialty in years of past of the classic hook and ladder or something. Do something. But to just throw it into the end zone on the final play when all you need is a first down.
Just have a receiver in the flat. I mean, you know, a running back. Make sure they're going to brush two, and then having running back just waiting there in case there's nothing, and you at least have a shot at that first down. I thought it was a nutty, pointless play call.
Well, I was just as frustrated by both of those things as you guys were. But the goal line situation, you know, you want to play to whatever your advantage is with that. And the puzzling part about it for me is if you're going to go with a kind of heavy package or a jumbo, whatever you want to call it, down there at the goal line, you want it to either be straight up field with a power runner, so, you know, Joe Williams, Zach Moss, somebody like that. And this is not to bag on Troy or anything like that. He's just not the kind of guy who's going to duck his head and run you over and drive through, you know. So you'd want somebody like that in that package, or else you want to get to the edge and use your speed. And neither of those things really happened. It was just kind of a continual, we're just going to push people back and that'll be fine. And I don't know if they saw something on film that made them think that was a possibility or made them think that they could, you know, make that happen. But the other option too is, you know, when you're down on the goal line, you want to keep as many options open as possible. And it's funny because I'm reminded of the Utah-BYU game, and sorry to bring this up. I know we're all trying not to talk about BYU, but when everybody criticized the last play that Detmer called it with Taysom, you know, the idea was right. You know, you want to get isolated to where these two guys are on these two guys. You know, you wanted the left tackle on the defensive end. The problem is that the players involved in the play for the execution were not up to the task, you know. And I think if you watch the game, you watch that left tackle, it struggled quite a bit. And so doubling back to here, you want to try and get your play calls in situations where you have guys that can take advantage of those kind of things. And those calls just didn't seem to me like we were putting somebody in a position to take advantage of another one. And that's the part that I think we've kind of been lost all year with our red zone stuff, is we haven't really – you know, you've seen a couple, you know, fades, and the fade is a tough throw, but haven't seen our, you know, taking advantage of Raylan Singleton or Tim Patrick in their height too often. You know, early in the year you did, and Tim Patrick made a lot of plays for touchdowns, you know. And so now you're looking at it and he's injured, and so you've got to find ways to take advantage of your guys that you have. And I would think that you'd probably want to do something with Joe Williams, Demaryius Simpkins, some of those quicker guys where they're getting to the edge. So they have that full length of the field to get the 3 or 4 or 5 yards of the pylon and not just try and go straight upfield every single time. You know, it's interesting. You watch the NFL games on Sunday, it's the same way. Those guys continually call it to where they just want to go, you know, like they get in the mindset of, you know, our guys can push their guys across the line. And as an offensive coordinator, I think you need to be careful when you think in that mode, because the guys across from you are trying to every bit as hard to stop you from getting across. And so you want to put them in the situations where they're vulnerable. So I would have liked to see something where you run maybe a fly sweep or an option or something like that, where you can spread the play out and try and get some of your speedy guys to an edge and stretch that and try and get the 3 yards in the course of running it all the way wide. As far as the last play, it kind of felt like I think they kind of burned what they really wanted to do on third down. They had the wheel route there and it was open. But unfortunately, with taking the sack, you know, that kind of wiped that away. And I think that wheel would have been, you know, it would have been huge. So at that point, you're kind of struggling and grasping for something there. But, I mean, I can kind of see the logic in it. You run all, you know, all all goes on that. It kind of creates some space. And so maybe your hope is that Troy can get outside of the pocket and maybe pick it up with his legs a little bit too. It just, the way it all went down, it just left such a bad taste in everybody's mouth, myself included. And then just being in the stadium, you know, you just felt the entire, I mean, it was still kind of quiet because everybody's trying to stay quiet while they're driving or anything like that, but it was just kind of like thunk, you know, and everybody's just like, ah, crap, you know. So it's frustrating, and you kind of hope that you have plays installed for that situation, but they may have burned those earlier on, or else they may have seen something, you know, like for example, you were talking about a hook and ladder. You know, if they're dropping seven in the coverage in the zone scheme, it kind of makes that hard to do, because then you've got guys in the zone that are going to be there and make the play. But at the same time, like, you've got some playmakers out there that can make some moves. You know, Damari Simpkins is a guy that I think, you know, I think he has some skills for that. But, you know, give him a chance in the open field to do something and make a play. But, you know, I also see why they went with what they went.
All right. Well, I mean, ultimately, that game was a really good football game. I think it showed that both these teams are great teams, and that they're going to be able to compete with anybody. The hardest part for me, I mean, that last play, yeah, it sucked your energy out, but it's really tough to stomach a loss like that right after FS1, and then ESPN and subsequent highlight reels shows all the different blocks in the back on that punt return. And I really don't want to bash on the refs too much. I do that plenty on Twitter. I mean, they didn't lose the game for us. Utah's lack of execution in certain parts. The Utes didn't win the game. I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to. But I really wish the Pac-12 would try to do something to where, you know, I shouldn't be able to say to people who are not on Twitter and say hashtag Pac-12 refs, and they start laughing because they know I'm talking about how inept the Pac-12 refs are. I mean, it's kind of a running joke, and I think it's time to do something about it. But I don't want to bash on them too much. Let's talk about the season. I mean, it's the bye week. You know, there's no game to preview. But, you know, there's a couple things that were coming into the season that were pretty big storylines, and let's see what we think of them now. The first storyline was Troy Williams was coming in. We're going to have a quarterback with a better arm who can also run. And everyone was pretty stoked about Troy Williams. And now we're through the games we are. We've got a few more games left. You know, Joseph, what do you think of Troy's progression through the season and what's happened?
Well, it's tricky for me because I'm a Ute fan and I watch these games and I really like what I see out of them. But before I do that, I'm always a stats guy and I'm always looking at the numbers. And the bottom line is the numbers just aren't that good. He's got a 54%, 55% completion rate on the season. He's 9-5 TD to INT. He's taken 15 sacks. And then there's a stat called QBR that ESPN uses. It's kind of a weird stat. It basically, 50 is average, 100 is perfect. And what's nice about it is that it's adjusted for the strength of your opponent. So you have a pretty good day against a team like San Jose State, but your adjusted QBR goes down because San Jose State's such a lousy team. And Troy Williams has only had one QBR over 68 all season long. For his season QBR is 54. He's been in the 30s a bunch. Honestly, from that perspective, from a number of perspectives, I think you can make a sound argument that Travis Wilson's a better quarterback. I think it's important to remember that even though Troy Williams has been bouncing around a lot, he doesn't actually have a ton of experience, so we have to see, you know, how he evolves next year. And I'm seeing the same thing fans are. I mean, he makes these passes that nobody in a Ute uniform has been able to make for a really long time. And they're awesome to see, but it's just not consistent enough. It's not happening often enough. And I don't know anything about how to fix that. I think his technique looks good. I think his arm looks good. And I don't know if he just doesn't know the offense well or isn't making the right decisions. But it's really beyond him, and I think I was certainly expecting more.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of things that, you know, Troy is just a matter of experience. I mean, he plays a year at Washington, then he goes to JC in Santa Monica, and now he's with the U. I mean, yes, he's a junior, but, you know, he's got one more year. I think he'll make a bigger jump next season when he's you know, he's gone through a season. He's getting more comfortable with the reads. Next, maybe we'll see some, you know, and maybe I'm wrong, and I would love for you guys to tell me wrong. Maybe Brian can tell me this, but it doesn't seem like he's calling, like there's no audibles in this offense this year. Am I wrong on that?
I haven't seen a ton of audibling. A lot of what they run, you don't necessarily need to have an audible in place. And I think that's the part about college offenses that people kind of don't realize as much anymore, is that they've evolved into simple read systems, you know, where a lot of people complain about the swing passes or things like that. And that's really off of what's called an RPO, a run play or a run pass option. And that's kind of where you'll see, I mean, you'll see all different formats and all different styles. But that's really the evolution of offense right now in college football, to where if you read the linebackers, if they're two or three in the box or you know, whatever your read key is, and then you either run the ball based on that or else you'll throw it to the side. And then as you know, kind of that little swing pass that everybody seems so frustrated over, or else there's, you know, another option to where you can throw the slant up top. And there are some other concepts that you can do based off of that as defenses start to bite into it. And so a lot of that kind of stuff, you're not going to audible out of, you're just going to make the read and check down to it. I think is that, you know, there's not a lot of stuff in this offense that you can necessarily audible to, from what I can see. You can change your out trees and things like that based on the zone or man look that you're getting, but it doesn't seem like it's complex to the point where there's a lot where he could switch around and do that. Or maybe they just aren't confident in him. Although, you know, I know that's a tough thing to kind of pick up on that stuff, as far as what to audible to, you know, what to check down to, and where he's probably still trying to grasp this offense, because the things that Utah does are a little bit more complex as far as the route combinations, what routes they're running, schemes, protection packages, everything like that, compared to what he used to do at Santa Monica.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think of, you know, the most recent quarterback that I fully trusted with the youth offense was Brian Johnson. And, you know, obviously he was there for a while, but the 2-minute drill offense where he literally was making the play calls as they go through the 2-minute drill, to where they could really, you know, run to the line, run a play, run to the line, run a play, and just go through it. Like, I don't know. I kind of miss that. I mean, I kind of hope that maybe, you know, maybe Troy Williams can get to that next year, or, you know, Tyler Huntley's going to be in the program for a little while, so hopefully he can get to that point. I think overall, though, I'm with you, Joseph. I mean, we watched the games. You know, there's nothing to, as much as his stats aren't amazing, I mean, he's winning ball games and he's making right choices. I mean, he's had a, you know, he had an interception a week ago, but, you know, otherwise he had a little bit of turnover problems at the beginning of the year, but we really haven't seen that since. And he's been making sharp decisions. I don't know what more we could really ask for from a quarterback.
And he can drop them in, man. I mean, the coverage is, sometimes it winds up with a pick, but the coverage is that he can throw through and get a completion out of it are really impressive. I mean, so just drop your jaw sometimes with throws that he can make.
Totally. All right, so let's talk, you know, one big other topic I wanted to hit is, you know, Utah's defense. We always expect this defense to be a shutdown defense, and this year that's been a little different. They're still creating a ton of turnovers. They're still not letting teams score, but they're letting a lot more big plays than we're used to. You know, I remember at the beginning of the year, Joseph, you thought this defense was going to be out of this world amazing. How do you feel about the defense at this point?
I've been disappointed. I think the injuries have a lot to do with it. There was a sharp change in the way the defense performed without Lo'olo Tulele on the line. And then even when he was back, he wasn't 100%, you could tell. And so that has a lot to do with it. The Marcus Williams injury has a lot to do with it. But more than anything else, I focus on the linebackers and failures in their either their coverage or their ability to kind of plug up gaps and make running backs work a little bit harder for those yards, led to a lot of explosive plays. And it's showing up in the numbers. The defensive FEI is sort of a basic efficiency metric. The last 2 years in 14 and 15, the Utes were ranked 8th in the nation and 10th in the nation in that, which is all you can ask for is a top 10 defense. This year they're 29th, so they're good. And when you look at the points allowed, that's been good. And when they've given up big yards and big scores, it's been to good offenses like USC and Cal. UCLA is kind of an outlier, but you always get one of those games a year. But it just hasn't been what I expected, and it's hard to put the finger on why. For me, and maybe that's what's so nice about having Brian here, is he can kind of identify that. The other thing that I don't think I appreciated enough when he went down with an injury is just how good of a football player Kylie Fitz is. And as good as Pita has been, he just hasn't been that complete player on every single play the way that Fitz was. And I don't think I appreciated him enough while we had him. Hope to see him back next year. What do you think, Brian? What's your take on the defense?
I think losing Fitz was a big hit. I think you see the difference in a guy who has, you know, ability with Pita to rush the passer because he is so athletically gifted. And then there's a guy like Hunter Dimmick who he stops the run, he plays the pass well, he's aggressive in pass rush. He's not the athletic freak that Pita is, but his technique is so solid and he gets linemen off balance and he uses his leverage well. You know, there are a few plays where I was watching against Washington where he would crash down and take out that lead puller getting to the outside and just really kind of jam up the whole situation, you know, and you have to be willing to go to a certain length to do that. And he is. And I think Kylie Fitz from the same perspective was that kind of a guy where he would, you know, he was strong and solid in the run game. And he was really explosive and talented in the pass game, just in the way that he used his body against, you know, offensive linemen. And I think the one thing that they're missing is that they had plans to move him around and put him in different situations the way they did with Nate Orchard in the past, the way they've done with Trevor Riley, where you could bring him from, you know, depth at linebacker and rush the passer. And my goodness, you know, with a guy that big and strong, if he's coming from depth as a linebacker, that's a really tough thing to ask an offensive lineman to stop a guy like that. And it causes so many issues. And so losing him hurts a lot. Marcus Williams, you know, losing him for the last few games, you can see the difference with some of those plays, because he can, where he positions himself on the field, can adjust what the quarterback is seeing, what he's looking at, you know. And so I think there are times where quarterbacks are more willing to take chances against a guy like, you know, a guy who hasn't been in, whereas Marcus Williams might discourage that. And the other aspect, too, is the angles that you take in pursuit from the safety. Marcus is so much more experienced. And so those injuries have hurt a lot. You know, and the other aspect, too, is I think they got burned early by some big plays, and so they've adjusted their strategy a little bit. They're playing a little bit more shallow and not as pressed as often as we used to be. And so, you know, those kind of things can cause you to adjust your game plan. And, you know, the bottom line is, as long as you keep winning, then you're going to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, on my end, maybe the defense hasn't been as good as we expected it to be. And I know a lot of people can't stand the chunk plays, but ultimately points aren't getting the defense is still only allowing enough points that the offense can win the game. Like, the offense is still in a position to win the game. It's not like the defense is Oregon's defense, where any team can drop 30 to 40, 50 points on them at any given moment, and then the offense has to score every drive. This is a completely different situation. The defense is reliable, may give up some chunk plays, but in the end, they're not going to let the game get out of hand to where the offense can't win the game. So, I mean, it kind of goes both ways. But, guys, I mean, we're hitting the long point of an episode, but, you know, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with everyone?
I hate bye weeks. I hate them. If somebody plays some football, I'm going to be watching, I think it's UCLA Colorado this weekend. Yes, I got Thursday night. I've got high hopes that the Bruins are going to do us all a solid and knock Colorado off their high horse a little bit.
All right. Well, yeah, any final thoughts, Brian?
I was just going to say real quick, you know, as the season progresses, it's not about where you start, but where you finish. And you just want to see some of these younger guys kind of continue to step up and make progress and come out of this bye week really strong. You know, people pointed out a lot on Twitter that the last three games last year were kind of slogged through. And I think part of that was because the evolution of the offense kind of halted. And so that's really where you want to see some of these younger guys or new guys, guys like Troy Williams, start to evolve and really step up and be the leaders that they kind of have molded themselves into, and see some guys on the defense, you know, Simeon Tatioli, Cody Barton, Rufa Tsonga. You want to see those guys step up and really start to play well. And so that's what I'm looking forward to most of all, is just watching their growth and evolution continue, finishing strong.
All right, let's hope that you do finish strong and we can get our rematch with the Huskies in the Pac-12 conference title game. And we'll see. But until next week, we'll see what happens. Go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to U Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Find us on Twitter @U Talk Podcast or email @utalk@gmail.com.